Well, the stars are out this week at Bay Hill for the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the next signature event on the PGA Tour schedule. Usually one of the most grueling tests we see each and every year, just like the king Arnold Palmer always wanted. It was a year ago, Kurt Kitayama getting his big breakthrough on the PGA Tour, slipping on the sweater and winning the API. We're going to talk with the defending champion who's made 10 straight cuts heading into Bay Hill. What's the key to his title defense? You're going to find out. Plus, some big news in the golf world as LIV has withdrawn their application for world ranking points. How did it all come to this? And is this the only move for LIV Golf going forward? We're going to have all that and so much more as Golf Today gets going right now.
Golf Today.
Hey, hey, happy Tuesday. Welcome into Golf Today. Here with you for the next 2 hours, George Savarikas hanging with Ryan Lavner. Boy, do we have some news to get to in this two-hour show. In the very end, we're going to hand you off to live golf with the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate. Here's the news I was alluding to, and this coming earlier today. LIV Golf has officially withdrawn their application for official world golf ranking points. LIV first applied for OWGR points July of 2022. They were formally denied by the OWGR last October. Letter was sent to LIV players competing in Hong Kong this week by Greg Norman, which said in part, a resolution which protects the accuracy, credibility, and integrity of the OWGR rankings no longer exists. We have made enormous efforts to fight for you and to ensure your accomplishments are recognized within the existing ranking system. Unfortunately, the OWGR has shown a little willingness to productively work with us. Having refused to recognize your performances over the last few seasons, the OWGR is not an official and cannot be an official ranking. This decision will remove any ambiguity about its relevance. The game of golf is changing. It's expanding and modernizing. LIV Golf believes that it is time for the player rating system to do the same, and we believe that an entirely independent ranking system would best serve the league, tours, players, fans, and stakeholders. With more on this news, let's welcome in Todd Lewis, who is on site at Bay Hill. Todd, what are the guys saying about this at the Arnold Palmer Invitational?
Well, first you have to understand what the official world golf ranking is on the global stage. It is used to measure which players get into all the major championships. Now, let's look at the PGA Tour. There have been 9 tournaments on the PGA Tour so far this season. I'm not going to count Nick Dunlap's win because he was an amateur ranked at the time outside the top 4,000 in the official world golf ranking. But of the other 8 winners on the PGA Tour, the average world ranking 73. Only one top 10 player has won on the PGA Tour this season, and that is Wyndham Clark at Pebble Beach, and that was a 54-hole rain-shortened event. I actually caught up with a couple of important players today, and I asked them, what does that world ranking of the winners say about the competition on the PGA Tour?
The competition is obviously very stiff. I mean, there's no question about it. We've had quite a few first-time winners on tour this year. You've got some tenured guys that are contending week in, week out. You know, the official world golf ranking is what it is right now. But I also think that the competition that we have is pretty stiff. I mean, you know, it's really good to see guys like Nick especially come up, and it just shows you the golf climate that we're in with kids in college coming up and playing that great. But, you know, I think that when you look at over the last few years and seeing the first-time winners and playing as well as they have, I think that's something that I'm more excited about, because on any given week you can see someone just pop off a win.
I want to follow up on what you hinted at in regards to the world golf rankings. Mm-hmm. How viable is that measurement?
You know, it kind of is what it is. I mean, you see what Joaquin's done this year, and he's 73rd in the world. I'm not a guy who's on the policy board or involved with those rankings, but the guy's played some really good golf. And I think, you know, having to get a special exemption from Augusta, you know, it's just there's some really good players, and there's some guys that have gone around the world and played really good golf, and I think that's something that once we get to the majors will be really fun to have us all back together. But I know that that's kind of the utopian goal for all of us right now, is to have the best players in the world play week in, week out. And I mean, I love this week in general because we've got the best players on the PGA Tour, and we've got guys that obviously really care about it. But I also think, you know, we'll see what happens going forward. I don't have a fix for it. I know some guys have voiced their opinions on it. I like staying out of that stuff, but you know, it's right now it's in an interesting position. I'll leave it at that.
There's a lot of strength and depth on this tour. You know, this is absolutely no disrespect to the winners, because they played better than me this year, but I don't think the world rankings are a true representation of the golf game at the minute. But I don't really look at them or pay attention to them anymore. I just don't think they're right. So I look at data golf as a better representation of how people are playing in the world, in my opinion. But I think it is partly a sign that, you know, that there's plenty of depth on here, and which we've known that for years anyway on the PGA Tour. There's always been a lot of strength in depth, but I certainly think nowadays the ranking side of it is a little bit skewed.
What's off about it?
Well, I mean, it's missing a lot of the top players, for one. I had a great conversation actually with Billy Schroeder from the OWGR, and he explained a lot to me, which made a lot of sense about the world ranking points, why LIV doesn't have them yet. Which made a lot of sense to me, and I think even though it is, given what he explained to me, was the right decision, I don't think it's right to not, you know, not have these players have involved in the world rankings. I mean, what's Dustin Johnson in the world? I don't even know. Like, it's, you know, Brooks Koepka. I just think that's the only issue at the minute, in my opinion, with the World Golf Rankings. I think data golf, like I say, is a better representation of where the game is.
And here, Matt, talk about data golf. That is a website that has a lot of statistical information when it comes to professional golf, including its own world ranking system that includes LIV golfers. You talk to a large majority of players out here, and I would say that there's a pretty good volume of those players that feel like the official World Golf Ranking is not a true representation of the talent on the professional stage. The question is, how do you fix that? I mean, LIV Golf plays only 54 holes compared to the players here that play 72 hole events on the PGA Tour. It's pretty much a closed shop on the LIV Tour, where there's a lot of turnover in tournaments here on the PGA Tour. So that indeed is the challenge in regards to the official World Golf Rankings. Guys?
Thank you, Todd. And that's part of why they've been at a stalemate, seemingly, for 2 years. Your thoughts on how this has unfolded, where we're at this point, that LIV is surrendered, in a sense, saying we're not getting world ranking points, we're not even going to keep the dialogue going with the OWGR going forward?
Yeah, there's so much to unpack here. I think, first of all, I think it's a little bit disingenuous for Greg Norman to say that, quote, enormous strides were made by trying to appease LIV Golf with the official World Golf Ranking. The OWGR's biggest beef with LIV Golf was the fact that it was a closed shop. And all LIV has done is had this promotions event for three players, and they also added basically a hand-picked team, John Rahm's team, to fill out its roster. It does leave two pretty weighty questions that I don't think we have enough time to actually answer today. One is, what does it mean for player access to majors? And two, what does this mean going forward for LIV's format? As it relates to the players, I do think it's interesting, because now it provides some context, this decision, about the war path that Bryson DeChambeau and Taylor Gooch and Joaquin Niemann have been on over the past couple months, kind of discrediting the OWGR. Essentially, if you say it enough times, eventually it just becomes kind of accepted, and there's kind of this revolt against the OWGR. The biggest issue as it relates to the world rankings, though, is that this issue has not really reached critical mass yet. In other words, who are we fighting about? We're fighting about Taylor Gooch, who at age 32 does not yet have a top 10 in a major championship. We're fighting over Dean Burmester and Lucas Herbert, who are inside the top 100 and yet do not qualify automatically for the major championships. This will only become a pressing matter for the major organizations when Bryson DeChambeau's major exemption runs out, when Dustin Johnson's major exemption runs out, when Cam Smith's or, you know, Brooks Koepka's could have this year had he not won the PGA. Until then, the OWGR could basically sit on their hands and wait for the landscape to shake itself out. That, to me, is what they're doing at the moment.
I would say two things are true here. One, LIV in no way put their best foot forward in constructing the league and trying to adhere to the existing official world golf ranking guidelines. So it's not exactly a surprise when people I had talked with on the inside at the outset said this would be a multi-year process, and in no way have they tried to have this be properly shaped and constructed to be awarded world golf ranking points, which is what Matt Fitzpatrick said, where he said, okay, I get why with the OWGR guidelines they were turned down. That being said, with the star power that they now have on LIV and the entire roster, there has to be some embrace for change and not just strict adherence to rigidity based on existing guidelines. I think it's wild that a league in which you have Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, Cam Smith all playing, they can't figure out a manner in which there are some semblance of world rankings going forward. And I do actually agree there should be an independent board. It shouldn't be all the stakeholders overseeing these tours. They should be removed from it. And you should have a board of, say, five people representing the best interests of what would be a worldwide ranking going forward.
The same organization that shot down LIV's bid is the same one that's hosting the major championships. And so it's, yeah, I agree. There certainly should be some sort of independence there. I think the official World Golf rankings are fair, but I think it's impossible to say that they're currently accurate. I think two things can be same. Two things can be true.
They're fair but flawed.
Yeah.
Currently.
They're fair but flawed. Right now, it looks very much like a PGA Tour ranking.
We're going to have much more with Rex Hoggard, who you're quite familiar with. Don't worry, we'll plug the
unfortunately.
Plug later in the show.
Of course.
Not right now. So he's going to be joining us on Golf Today, but we're going to turn our focus to this week's tour stop, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, fourth signature event already of the season on the PGA Tour. This tournament offers 700 FedEx Cup points to the winner. Limited field will be competing for a $20 million purse. And let's welcome in a man who's top 50 in the world golf rankings right now in the field this week, Ben Ahn, joining us from Bay Hill. Ben, I don't know if you'd heard the LIV Golf news, how they're withdrawing their application for world golf ranking points. Do you think, as the world rankings are currently constructed, that they're optimized in a sense?
Well, that's a very hard question for me to answer. I saw that news, yes, a few hours ago. That's unfortunate. They withdrew they kind of stopped chasing for the world ranking points. I think they deserve it with how many good of players they have right now. But I also see the other side of it where they couldn't get it because of some reason. So I see kind of both, you know, you got to admit it, they got some good players out there. So that's unfortunate, but I guess it is what it is. To be fair, I don't really care. Like, I'm sorry, but you know, I play in the PGA Tour and I get the world ranking points. So, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Love the honesty.
Yeah, much appreciated, actually. Yeah. Ben, you put it on social media, so it must be true that you were curious to see how Anthony Kim would play. Did you get a chance to watch him in his LIV debut in Jeddah? And if so, what did you think? We broke it down yesterday. Curious your thoughts, though.
Yeah, I mean, he took a long time off the tournaments, and I guess he was a little disappointed with the scores, and I didn't get to watch any of the shots. I saw some clips. His swing still looks pretty close to what he had, you know, 10, 12 years ago. I'm sure he'll play better as more he plays. So, if you're a golf fan like me, I've seen him when I was growing up. He was out here just before I joined the tour. So I always watched him on TV back then. And, I'm looking forward to seeing play a little bit more rest of the year. So, yeah, I think that's the exciting news that he's coming back to golf, and hopefully he can, you know, keep this going.
You had an exciting start to the season with what you're able to do at Kapalua and then the runner-up at the Sony Open. What do you feel has clicked with your game going from January and leading into the second week of the Florida swing now?
Yeah, I've been playing some decent golf this year. You know, all these hard work and over the last 2-3 years, it's my swing coach, Sean Foley, and then my putting coach, John Graham. We've been working on, you know, basically everything in golf, I guess. You know, my full swing to a short game to putting. So I guess I'm seeing a bit of a progress so far. And then I've been playing steady golf this year. Hopefully I can keep this momentum going. I feel like I'm hitting it pretty good. Just got to, you know, get rid of some of the silly mistakes out there. You know, and especially this course I really like. You know, I've been playing well over here the last couple of years. So, yeah, I just got to keep doing what I'm doing and keep, you know, put the foot on the pedal.
Ben, with the playoff loss earlier this year at the Sony Open, what is your self-talk like after that happens? How do you keep from focusing on the fact that you were so close while balancing kind of the optimism for where your game is at the moment?
Yeah, it was obviously very disappointing to finish it that way, but like I said, my social media, you know, that it was unfortunate to miss that putt in the last hole to extend the playoff. But, you know, like, the golf doesn't come into that last shot, you know, that you play over 72 holes, you know, all the shots counted. And, you know, I missed plenty of short putts, birdie putts out there all week. So, but it's just a shame kind of finish that way. But I had my family there with me that week, so I didn't really have to think about it much. As soon as we finished, we kind of rushed to the airport, so I kind of forget about how I played that day even. And I had to go back to my, you know, normal life playing with the kids, and then we had to fly to the mainland. So it was disappointing, but like I said, I saw a lot of optimistic things about it. I didn't play the perfect golf, but you know, I played somewhere decent. I was in contention. All the things that we worked on is working. So I kind of kept my, yeah, just optimistic thoughts, and, you know, here and there, and gather them all together. And I've been playing some good golf this year, very steady. So it's a bummer, but it's one of those weeks, I guess.
Ben, you're an underrated and entertaining Twitter follow, or X, whatever we want to call it these days. At what point did you get comfortable with just sharing stream of consciousness, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and put it out there?
Yeah, I think I spend too much time on it, to be honest, sometimes. I try to dial it back a little bit. You know, social media is a very fun and it could be a very harsh place, you know. But I try to share my thoughts out there. You know, people are interested. Some people are interested, definitely. There are a lot of controversial things going on out there in the golfing world these days. I try to stay very neutral about it. You know, I don't see things black and white. You know, all these talks about, you know, LIV Golf and PGA Tour, but I'm sharing my thoughts. There's nothing I try to speak for someone else. You know, that's purely my thoughts, and I love sharing it with other people, and I love getting some of the responses. And, you know, I'm trying to stay away from it a little bit. I think it drains some kind of energy. So, but I love spending my time on it, and people love it. So, probably, you know, so. Tweets some stuff, but a little bit less now.
Ben, what is it with you Cal guys? We got Max Homa, who's kind of the leader in the Twitter space. Michael Kim now has been really vocal. Yeah. You are as well. I mean, the three of you are voices that people hear on Twitter.
Yeah, I think it's very, that's a coincidence, I guess. It's not because we're from Cal. We say stuff like that, but you know, everyone, like Michael's been very, I like his Twitter, and I would like the things that he tweets about, you know, a lot of tips, and he shares a lot of inside stories, which is a little different than mine, I guess. And I love Max's tweet as well. I don't think I can compare my tweets compared to those guys. I think they put some good stuff out there, I think. But, you know, just very coincidental, I think. But, you know, I like how the fans like it. You know, that's the point of us tweeting. So hopefully they can keep follow us and like them.
Ben, we started this conversation with a talk about the world rankings. And so, unfortunately, we have to end it with one. You're 43rd in the world ranking. How much is the Masters on your mind at this moment? And how do you keep that from becoming a distraction moving forward?
Yes, it's definitely on the side of my mind. But like I said, as long as I play some good golf, and it comes with it, I think it's like a trophy, right? You play some good golf, it follows with it. So I'm not trying to put my mind anywhere, you know, near the Augusta. Hopefully I will get in by the deadline. But, you know, I got this week, I'm a Palmer Invitational. I got the Players next week. So I got some big events coming next couple of weeks. So, you know, I just got to play some steady golf and have been playing the last couple of months. So. And then you just, I think it just follows with it. So, yeah, let's kind of play some good golf this weekend, and that'll do.
Ben, enjoy the walk this week at Bay Hill, and all the best to you and your family going forward.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Here's how you can watch Ben and our coverage of the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard Thursday and Friday, 2 Eastern on Golf Channel. Saturday and Sunday starts on Golf Channel at 12:30, then shifts over to NBC at 2:30. Golf Today is back right after this. The season ranks for courses that are non-major post layouts. Torrey Pines South, the hardest on the PGA Tour. You see that scoring average, 1.62 over par. Bay Hill Club and Lodge, if you do the math, was the sixth most difficult, playing to a scoring average of 72.66. So with more on the golf course, let's bring in our man, Todd Lewis, joining us from Bay Hill. Todd, what do you got?
Well, there are actually two big factors that make this golf course so difficult on the PGA Tour. Number one being the rough. It is very healthy. Right now it's being cut. They're going to be topping it off at 4 inches. And by the time Sunday rolls around, it'll be probably 4.5 inches in height. And like I said, it is healthy. It is very dense and thick. If a ball misses the fairway, it lands in that rough, you will see several players this week chip it out with a wedge and try to scramble to make a par. The other factor, the greens here. First off, they are very smooth. Some of the best greens on the PGA Tour. However, they are fast. Right now, they're at around 13, and come Sunday, they are expecting it to be higher. I talked to Bland Cooper, who is the agronomist for the PGA Tour, setting up this golf course. He said not only will these greens be fast, but they are going to be pretty firm. Right now, it's the firmest they've ever seen these greens for a Tuesday here at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. The only issue is going to be weather for the PGA Tour and the setup crew. Expecting some rain tonight and into tomorrow, maybe close to a quarter inch. But you look at what Thursday through Sunday has, we're going to get some high temperatures. Once that rain moves through, that's going to firm this golf course up. If they don't get a significant amount, this golf course is going to get firmer and firmer. There is a slight chance of showers here and there throughout the week. But come Sunday, although the temperatures will be cooler, they're expecting these greens to be a lot more firm than they are right now, obviously. And look for the color of these greens to turn from a green to maybe a dark tan, showing off the firmness of this golf course. So it's going to be quite the challenge here for these players. I talked to a couple of players, and they told me this setup here for API is tougher than some major championship setups that they've faced.
87 on Saturday. Bay Hill is always like the dawning of spring in Orlando, isn't it?
What I love, Todd, like anyone in the Northeast or Midwest hearing Florida man say cooling to 78 is rolling their eyes.
Ridiculous.
Right now, the first week of March.
Tilo, you also had a chance to catch up with world number one Scottie Scheffler earlier today. Obviously, his ongoing bugaboo has been his putting. What's the latest this week?
You know, it's remarkable. You look at the stats on Scottie Scheffler. He is second on the PGA Tour in strokes gained total, despite being 144th in strokes gained putting. Tee to green, he is by far the best player out here on the PGA Tour, but his putting, it needs some improvement, and he understands that. After the Tour Championship, he started working with renowned putting coach Phil Kenyon. They changed his setup. He also changed his equipment, went to a custom prototype putter that his manufacturer made for him that was a blade putter. But I was watching him today, and I noticed that he has changed his putter once again. He has gone to what is a TaylorMade Spider X Tour putter, which is a mallet putter. It's not the blade putter that he has been using, and it's also been cut down a bit. He's added a half an inch of length, so his length is 35.5 inches, so it's a little bit of a taller putter for Scottie Scheffler. And besides going to a mallet putter, the biggest thing that he wanted to change is removing the line on his golf ball. I talked to him about that, and he said, because I want to be a little more of an artist on the greens. He said, I've taken the line off my ball, and the alignment on that putter, that new putter that he has him pointing the direction he is going. Now, you see a lot of players, whether it's an amateur or a professional, with a line on a ball and a line on their putter. Well, he wanted to, again, eliminate that line on his ball and just concerned himself with the alignment of his putter. He said having two lines or two measuring devices in regards to reeds can be a bit confusing. So he's going to simplify things, but he does have a brand new putter in his bag for API.
Still trying to solve that puzzle when it comes to getting that putter straightened out for the reigning PGA Tour Player of the Year in Scottie Scheffler. So you hear the changes, Lav, that he's now making with the putter. It seems like it's one thing after another. What I've noticed over the last, call it, year or two, he doesn't seem to putt with a ton of freedom. And there are times inside 10 feet he can look a little wooden with the putter.
It is interesting. And going to the mallet model now, that's actually what Rory McIlroy suggested. Remember, he joined the broadcast, the CBS broadcast, during the Genesis Invitational and said it might behoove Scotty to move back to that sort of model just to have more forgiveness. But it was interesting. So at Riviera, I had about a 20-minute sit-down with Scottie Scheffler for a story that's going to appear next week on GolfChannel.com previewing the Players' Championship. And we got into his putting and kind of the perception of it. And he said, you know, technically, he feels so much better about, you know, standing over the ball and what his technique is going to be. He doesn't worry as much now about hitting it out of the heel, but he thinks there's almost like a perception issue. He's not saying it's like a media creation. Remember, he said that over last summer where, you know, you guys are making this into a media narrative. He agrees that it was a problem that he needs to address, and he's taken the steps to do so by adding a putting groove. But he said not all 8-footers are valued equally. In other words, if he has an 8-footer after hitting a 5-iron to 8 feet and it's left to right slider and he misses it, that's a whole lot different than missing the green and chipping up to 8 feet up the hill and making that one. He said it's just harder to play golf the way he's doing it, putting for birdie all the time, and just it's not all equal. Secondly, he also thinks it's beginning to get into a little bit of Tiger territory. Scottie Scheffler at the end of 2023 found himself rewatching some of Tiger's old clips, and he said the commentators and the analysts would be ripping Tiger anytime that he missed a putt inside 15 feet because we've become so accustomed to seeing Tiger Woods, you know, pull off the miraculous. He said it's actually a benefit to Scotty, or it shows that he's entered this rarefied air, that people are expecting him to make those putts when, obviously, Tiger Woods is the greatest player that we've seen in this generation. Scottie Scheffler's not there yet. He makes a few more putts, he could be well on his way.
But the tee to green, I mean, he had put up Tiger-type numbers last season.
Best since Tiger's prime.
Correct, and it was the putting at 145th that was what held him back. So that's why I thought at first maybe the perception was a little unfair to Scotty, but then by the end of the season, I mean, he agrees with what everyone was basically saying. That's there's one part of your game that is not like the rest, and the rest has been spectacular, and that's why you've been PGA Tour Player of the Year for the last couple seasons out there. And we're going to hear from the newest PGA Tour winner, Austin Eckroat. One on Monday, and now we're going to hear from him here on Tuesday on Golf Today. He goes from the champ at PGA National to in the fold at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Took 5 days, but for Austin Eckroat, well worth the wait. Getting his first win on the PGA Tour this past week at Cognizant Classic at the Palm Beaches. He's on site at Bay Hill and caught up with our Todd Lewis earlier.
Austin, you drove from the West Palm area up here to Orlando to get ready for the API event here. Did you have a chance in those moments to reflect back on what you've accomplished?
You know, not really. We had traffic, so we were busy dealing with that. But yeah, I mean, I still had time last night to, you know, kind of let it sink in a little bit, but it's a quick turnaround and trying to get ready for this week now.
What are you most proud of and that you were able to do to cross the threshold and win?
I think just the, you know, dealing with all the factors of last week with the, you know, the weather delays and the sleeping on a lead in the middle of the round. It was just it's a difficult scenario that I've never really had any other situation that's been similar to that. You know, I had no experience to draw off with that. And to handle it the way I did, I was really, really proud of that.
What attitude did you bring to the golf course on Monday to get the job done?
Yeah, it was just like I tried to treat it like any other round. You know, that's why I wanted to finish out on hole 7, but basically in the dark, was just so I could come back to a driver off the 8th tee, you know, kind of feel like a first opening tee ball. I asked Stone if he'd announce me, but he didn't. So, you know, I just tried to make it feel as normal of a round as even though we were playing 11 holes as I could.
I'm assuming you've dreamed of winning on the PGA Tour. How does the reality compare to that dream?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a lot more tired last night than I thought I would be, but the, you know, I've been dreaming of this since I was a kid. You know, me and my dad, you know, he got me into the game when I was about 3 years old, so it's been a goal of ours my whole life, and just happy that, you know, I was able to do it.
And now you're locked into all the signature events, including this one here this week. You don't have much time to get ready, but making the adjustment to travel here to get ready for this one, what do you need to do mentally and emotionally to prepare for another good week?
Yeah, I mean, the game's obviously in a good spot, and I want to make sure that I don't overwork myself the next 2 days with, you know, coming off last week and finishing on Monday. So take it easy, get to know the golf course a little bit, but just make sure that I'm mentally prepared to go on Thursday.
Congratulations, well deserved.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
From one PGA Tour winner to another, remember when Will Zalatoris got his breakthrough victory a couple of years ago, then had that back injury. He's making just his fifth official start since returning. We're going to dive into the state of his game as he gets ready to peg it at Bay Hill this week. Very personal week for us here on Golf Channel on the PGA Tour. We remember the life of the king, Arnold Palmer, the co-founder of this event, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, one of only two current PGA Tour events named after a former player, the other being the AT&T Byron Nelson in Dallas, and this the eighth playing of the event since Arnold Palmer died on September 25th, 2016, 2 weeks after his 87th birthday. So AP, obviously the founder of the Arnold Palmer Invitational and co-founder of Golf Channel. Back in 1994, the King started the Arnold Palmer Scholarship, which rewards an outstanding golfer with an impressive academic record. Zalatoris received the Arnold Palmer Scholarship from Wake Forest and continues to have a special connection to the King.
I always tell people that when I got offered the Arnold Palmer Scholarship to go to Wake Forest, that my decision was kind of made for me at that point. I had a pretty fun dinner on Sunday with Amy Saunders and Peter Jacobson and Jerry Pate, and it was just fun reminiscing and hearing some of the stories from those guys. They're reminiscing. I unfortunately never got to meet them. I got a signed letter from them once I accepted a scholarship, but you know, just hearing some of the stories about how he carried himself, and obviously with everything that's gone on in the golf climate, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that, and you know, it's kind of a guy that, you know, I feel like I've heard stories about him, you know, over the last 10 years since I've taken his scholarship, but there's still stories that I've never heard, and we're still laughing, you know.
What does this tournament mean to you, having that connection, but being able to play in the Kings tournament?
Yeah, I mean, it's a beast of a golf course, for one, and you know, we always joke about how the week gets harder and harder, and we always kind of, by Sunday, everyone's always kind of joking about how Arnie's smiling from heaven, you know, watching the carnage. So but yeah, it means a lot to me. You know, even though I never got to meet him, the guy's meant a lot to me personally and my career, and you know, led me to Wake Forest. And you know, like I said, even though it's been a lot of guys meant a lot to my career, I mean, I met my wife at Wake Forest, and so it's just kind of a fun week to come here and spend some time with Amy and the family.
All right, let's go over here to Shed.
Good morning, Will.
Morning.
When you said you were ahead of schedule with your, I guess, the physical aspect of your comeback, what does that look like? What does that mean?
Yeah, I think in terms of how I'm able to practice and be able to recover faster, I came in with really no expectations this year. In terms of my body, and because I had never gone through an eight month recovery, but I knew that I felt better. I just didn't want to jump the gun and say, you know, take the reins off and, you know, get back to my old ways of practice. But you know, my speed is slowly coming back. You know, I kind of, the analogy that I've used is that I keep thinking that my speed is back to 100%, but then all of a sudden it keeps creeping up a little bit more and more and more. So it's so far so good. The changes feel great. You know, I haven't really had, I haven't had any flare-ups or anything like that. So I feel awesome.
Will Zalatoris is making his fifth start of the year this week at Bay Hill. And George, this is what you call a trending player. Missed cut, Sony Open, his season debut in 2024, kind of a follow-up to that rusty performance that we saw at the Hero World Challenge in December. Will Zalatoris is not about to place expectations on himself for 2024. Are you, though? Are you ready to place expectations once again on Willie Z?
I'm getting there, because expectations, if you had just looked at the Hero and Sony, were extremely low. And the concern was his clubhead speed pre-injury was, he touched the 120s. He was like a 115. So the thought was, okay, he's lost 5 to 7 miles an hour based on the new swing that he has to try and preserve his back long term. Clearly, he has found something since then, made 3 straight cuts, runner-up at the Genesis Invitational, looking like the exciting player that had contended in so many majors that we thought could not only be in the upper echelon of PGA Tour players, but could be a guy who wins a major down the road, plays on the Ryder Cup and President's Cup for the next 10, 15-plus years. So I think Genesis was enough where you saw flashes thinking, okay, this guy can look like the Will Zalatoris who did pre-injury. Do you agree?
I do agree. And it's crazy to think how much his career changed. Like, he won the week before basically all of these back issues started. He was number one in the FedEx Cup. He was going to be playing on the President's Cup team. And all of a sudden, he has these injury issues that basically knock him out for a year and a half. I talked to his performance coach, Josh Gregory, after that runner-up finish at Riviera. And he said that Genesis was such a huge step for Will Zalatoris and the rest of the team. He felt great physically. He hit the ball great. He's got that new broomstick putter, and he was kind of sweeping it so well there. And it was much-needed validation in the sense that you can talk about it and you can see it at home, but actually doing it basically against a major championship-type field on a major championship-type venue at Riviera was just so huge for his confidence. Josh Gregory told him afterward, "You won today. You might not have walked home with the trophy." That was Hideki Matsuyama after shooting a 62 in the final round. But you won. You did everything that you wanted to do this week. You're back. And now we can focus on the rest of the season, built primarily around those major championships.
And he had such a redemptive arc putting. And you wonder, I mean, he would get slaughtered for the look of this stroke aesthetically inside 6 feet. How much of that was precursor to the back issues that he then had? Now he has such fluidity with the putting stroke. So it's been, as a golf fans and media members who cover the tour, it's been great to see the return of Willie Z. Leaderboard was absolutely stacked a year ago. You look at the names who are trying to chase down this man, Jordan Spieth, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Harris English. They were all top four, but it was Kurt Kitayama with that gorgeous lag, just needed to get home in two to win for the first time on the PGA Tour and is able to get the job done. Now the defending champ heading into Bay Hill this week on the Florida swing. Kurt, what's it like being back on property?
It's great. A lot of good memories here, and obviously really happy to be back.
Kurt, we see the graphic on Sunday at PGA Tour events, all that comes with winning on the PGA Tour. In your opinion, what's the best perk that comes with being a PGA Tour winner?
You know, probably a Masters invite. I think that's one of the, you know, the biggest event that a lot of us dream of playing in. And, you know, it's one of the smallest fields and the hardest majors to get into. And I think last year I was in based off world ranking, but, you know, I think that's one of the really nice perks of it, of winning, is getting into the Masters.
Kurt, you're riding good form into the Arnold Palmer Invitational. You made 10 straight cuts. Earlier on the show, we had another past champ from Bay Hill, Paul Guidos, on. He said when he won a 96, he then played terrible for 2-3 months after because he had these elevated expectations, thinking I should contend whenever I'm teeing it up, but then long-term was able to channel that to know, hey, in contention, I can get this done. What did you have to learn about yourself after winning for the first time?
Yeah, I think, for me, I had a lot of close calls, and sometimes you give yourself, like, self-doubt where you're not sure if you can do it, and to finally pull through definitely gives you, you know, all the confidence in the world that if you put yourself in that situation again, that you can do it. So I think moving forward, when you know you're in contention, you know you can, you can do it ultimately, and that's the biggest thing.
Kurt, what sort of advice would you give Jake Knapp or Austin Eckroat, who are experiencing this rush of being PGA Tour winners now for the first time?
Yeah, congrats to them. They doing it early in their, you know, first 2 years, especially Jake's in his first year. Man, you just keep riding it. You're playing well, and, you know, you just keep playing. And, I mean, you just, yeah, just keep going. You know, I'm sure they're feeling extremely confident, and they're playing really well, so just keep going.
Kurt, on a lighter note, are you digging the Quadzilla nickname, or you have another nickname you prefer?
I'm okay with it. It's just, you know, I'm used to it. Xander kind of, you know, bullied its way through, so now it's kind of been out here. So I'm just used to it, so it's fine.
And as we're
I've been laying off the leg work, though, lately.
No more arm days? Not just all leg days?
Yeah.
Okay, and Kurt, just a final thought for you as you're looking forward to your title defense this week.
Yeah, I just come back to a familiar place, so hopefully use those past good experiences out here, and you know, hopefully down the stretch I'll be able to kind of go back on them and use them, you know, when it's time.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, one of the best leaderboards, one of the best Sundays we saw last year on the PGA Tour. Hopefully you have a nice encore in store this week. Best of luck, Kurt.
Thank you.
So he's laying off leg day now. We're finding out everything.
Just like 12-ounce curls for you and I, but apparently he's the leg press is no more.
It's always fascinating the psyche of a player when they win for the first time and they know I can do it, but then they also have the built-in set of inherent expectations that come with that going forward.
Sure, and he had some good finishes after Bay Hill, whether it was the match play, the PGA Championship as well, and then he went through that lull where I'm sure as a player you're always kind of measuring yourself of what you did. That's where a sports psychologist comes in. That's where the patience and the long-term view of saying, okay, I've got some status now on the PGA Tour. I can settle in. It's easier for us to say it's sitting in this chair than it is to actually do.
Yeah, so Kurt Kitayama trying to do what we saw Matt Everett do about a decade ago, and that's go back-to-back at Bay Hill. For Ryan Lavner, I'm George Savarikas. Thanks for joining us.